Chapter 12. Factors of Enlightenment. Once, when the Buddha was living at Rajagaha, the venerable Mahakasapa, who was living in Pippali Cave, became very ill. In the evening, the Buddha left his solitude to pay a visit to the venerable Mahakasapa. After taking his seat, the Buddha said, "How is it with you, Kasapa? How are you bearing your illness? Are your pains decreasing?" Mahakasapa replied, "Lord, I am not bearing my illness well. My pain is very great, and it shows no sign of decreasing." Then the Buddha said, "Kasapa, I have taught 7 factors of enlightenment. When these factors are cultivated and carefully developed, they lead to realization and perfect wisdom. In other words, to Nibbana." "What 7? The Buddha continued. "Mindfulness, investigation into phenomena, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity." Hearing these words, Kasapa rejoiced. "Oh, blessed one," he said, "these 7 are indeed factors of enlightenment. I welcome the utterance of the worthy one." Then and there, Mahakasapa rose from his sickness, and his ailment vanished. The 7 factors of enlightenment are the qualities we need to achieve the goal of our practice. As our meditation deepens and the fetters subside, these 7 positive qualities arise in us. With mindfulness as their crown jewel, the 7 factors help us defeat the forces of delusion that disturb our concentration and delay our progress on the path to liberation. The suttas tell a number of stories, like that of Mahakasapa, in which even hearing someone speak the names of the factors provides relief from pain, disease, and adversity. Once, when the Buddha himself was ill, the venerable Mahakunda recited the names of the 7 factors, and the Buddha's grievous sickness disappeared. It is easy to memorize the list of factors of enlightenment, and some people do. But it is not enough just to know what the factors are. We must understand the meaning of each factor and use our mindfulness to see when it is present, how it arises, and how to develop and maintain it. In Pali, the 7 factors are known as bodhangas. The word comes from bodhi, which means enlightenment, and anga, which means limb. The 7 factors we discuss in this chapter are the limbs, the arms and legs of enlightenment. Without them, we cannot walk the path to freedom from suffering. They arise in the same order for everyone. In fact, each marks a stage in our progress along the path. We cannot skip any stage, because each develops naturally out of the one before. Let's look more closely at each factor. Mindfulness. Everything we have been discussing so far pertains to mindfulness. All progress on the path starts with this quality. As the Buddha said, mindfulness is the chief of all the dharmas. But in order for our mindfulness to become a factor leading to enlightenment, it has to be strong, focused, and specific. Here is how the Buddha describes this special kind of mindfulness. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu abides contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world, on that occasion unremitting mindfulness is established in him. On whatever occasion unremitting mindfulness is established in a bhikkhu, on that occasion the mindfulness enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it. And by development, it comes to fulfillment in him. Translators Bhikkhu Nanamoli and Bhikkhu Bodhi. What can we learn from these words? First, to become a factor of enlightenment, our mindfulness must have a clear focus, such as the body as a body. We can also focus on feelings, thoughts, or phenomena. These 4, of course, are the 4 foundations of mindfulness we have been considering. Next, we must be ardent and alert. That means that we meditate with effort and enthusiasm. Third, we must put aside covetousness and grief with reference to the world. In other words, we do not allow feelings and thoughts about ordinary day-to-day concerns to disturb our concentration. Actually, we should put aside greed and distress about the world all the time, not only when we are sitting on the cushion. Finally, our mindfulness must be unremitting. In other words, we must practice mindfulness all the time, not just while we are meditating. In fact, we should practice mindfulness during all activities, whether we are talking, eating, drinking, or waiting for the bus. Because of mindfulness, even ordinary activities are wholesome and beneficial. If we remember our mindfulness only occasionally, or practice it only during meditation sessions, it will take a very long time to develop to the level necessary to liberate us from the fetters. Mindfulness becomes a factor of enlightenment only when we are fully engaged in being mindful every waking moment. As we have been discussing, mindfulness requires a specific kind of awareness. In each instant of mindfulness, we are conscious of the changing nature of everything that happens to us. We recognize that none of it can make us permanently happy. Most important, we understand that there is no permanent self or soul who is experiencing any of this. When mindfulness is established as our constant attitude, we discover that we have been practicing the seven factors of enlightenment all along. When we meditate on mindfulness of the body as a body, we naturally use the factors of investigation, effort, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. The same is true when we meditate on mindfulness of feelings, thoughts, and phenomena. Our task now is to make our mindfulness even more steady and strong, so that mindfulness itself becomes the focus of our meditation. As we continue to meditate in this way, mindfulness becomes a factor of enlightenment and speeds our progress on the path toward liberation. Investigation. Wise people are inquisitive. Using our deeply cultivated mindfulness, we investigate the dharmas, or phenomena, in our own mind and body. Turning inward in this way happens naturally when the mindfulness factor is strong and clear. The focus of our investigation is the five aggregates. Our mindfulness inquires everywhere into our form, feelings, perceptions, thoughts, and consciousness. We see the arising of the breath, postures, clear comprehension, parts of the body, four elements, 108 types of feelings, five hindrances, six senses, and 10 fetters that arise depending on the senses and their objects. We see their disappearing nature. We investigate all of them with powerful mindfulness. How do we investigate? The process is the same for us as it was in the Buddha's time. We listen to the Dharma, remember what we have heard, and then examine the meaning of the Dharma we have learnt. If anything is unclear or doubt arises, we ask questions, we think, we discuss. We focus our mindfulness on every aspect of our life and activities, on and off the cushion. For instance, when a thought arises, we investigate to see whether it is spiritually beneficial. We ask, does this thought reduce my greed and hatred or increase them? Does it minimize my confusion or add to it? Does it make me and others peaceful? If we discover that the thought increases greed, hatred, and delusion, and destroys peace and happiness, we ask, what can I do to eliminate it? If we discover that the thought is wholesome, we ask, what can I do to maintain it? Is my mindfulness sufficient? If not, how can I improve it? We use the same method to investigate the other aggregates. For instance, we inquire into our feelings by asking, am I attached to pleasant feelings? Do I reject unpleasant feelings? How many times have I been distracted from my mindfulness by desire for pleasant objects or hatred for unpleasant ones? We also investigate how well we understand essential Dharma concepts, such as impermanence. We ask, does it occur to me that the body is mine? What makes me think that it is mine? Do I see that the body's parts and elements are always changing? Perhaps we discover that our understanding of impermanence is not very clear. We suspect that this confusion may be why the thought that the body is mine keeps coming back, As a result, we resolve, I will spend more time meditating on the body's impermanence. We also examine our everyday actions and attitudes. We ask, how many times have I gotten angry when somebody pointed out my faults? How many times have I enjoyed criticizing others? How many times have I taken pleasure in gossiping or quarreling? If we find that our actions and attitudes are healthy, we investigate how to maintain and strengthen them. If we find that they need to be improved, we figure out what to do to change them. As we can see from these samples, it is our job to make sure we understand the four foundations of mindfulness and apply this understanding to our meditation and our life. No one can do this hard work for us. We have to manage our own body, mind, and actions every moment of our waking life. No one can walk the path on our behalf. We use mindfulness and intelligent investigation to check whether what we are doing is holding us back or helping us move toward our spiritual goals. The attitude we should adopt is called, come and see. Nobody has invited us to investigate the Dhamma. There is no place we have to go to engage in this investigation, and there is nothing we can see with our eyes. Rather, the truth of what we experience all the time invites our attention. The truth is called Dhamma. It invites us, saying, if you want to be free from trouble, look at me. As the Sutta tells us, the Dhamma is directly visible, immediate, inviting one to come and see, to be personally experienced by the wise. Energy. As we continue our investigation of the five aggregates, we become more and more interested in what we are doing. That interest arouses the energy to make even greater effort to stay the course. We experience enthusiasm, along with the determination never to give up. This combination is the energy factor of enlightenment. A simple example illustrates how investigation arouses energy. When we watch with mindfulness and attention, anything we experience seems to follow a trajectory similar to the motion of a stone thrown into the air. The stone rises as strongly as the power we use to throw it. But as it moves upward, the rising energy reduces and the speed slows down. Eventually, the upward motion stops. Finally, the stone reverses course and falls to the ground. Seeing this, we become interested in checking to see whether every instant of feeling, thought, perception, and consciousness follows this pattern. This interest generates the determination to be even more mindful, and the energy factor leading to enlightenment develops within us. When mindfulness combines with the enlightenment factor of energy, we are increasingly able to use skillful effort to keep from getting caught in greed, hatred, and delusion. Skillful effort helps us distinguish between thoughts and feelings we should welcome and those we must avoid. When harmful impulses arise, we close the doors of our senses to suffocate them. Then we use effort to replace them with beneficial impulses, such as generosity, loving friendliness, and wisdom. Because our energy is aroused, we are not lenient. We do not let our guard down for even an instant. As the Sutta tells us, realizing that this body is as fragile as a clay pot, and fortifying this mind like a well-defended city, drive out delusion with the sword of wisdom. Until the final battle is won, we use energetic effort to safeguard, secure, and maintain what we have gained. But our energy is calm and focused, rather than hyper-intense. Skillful mindfulness, skillful investigation, and skillful effort work together like a well-trained team to purify the mind. We recognize that life is as brief as a flash of lightning, but there is still a chance to liberate ourselves from the cycle of suffering. As the Bodhisattva, the Buddha-to-be, exclaimed with profound determination, let my blood dry up, my flesh wither away, my body be reduced to a skeleton. I will not give up what humanly can be attained. Joy. When the energy factor of enlightenment is strong, joy arises as a factor of deep concentration meditation. The stages of deep concentration meditation, called the jhanas, take us beyond the ordinary mindfulness that we've been talking about into a series of deeply tranquil, harmonious, and powerful states. As mentioned earlier, I described the jhana states in detail in my book, Beyond Mindfulness in Plain English. As we progress through the successive stages of jhana, the 5 hindrances are put to sleep and the 10 fetters are neutralized, making our concentration even stronger. When the hindrance of ill will is overcome, our meditation becomes joyful. This emotion relaxes the body and mind, generating a feeling of serenity and peace. As our concentration deepens further, we experience 5 increasingly intense feelings of joy. Minor joy, momentary joy, showering joy, uplifting joy, and all-pervading joy. Minor joy makes our body hair stand on end. Momentary joy is like lightning flashing moment after moment. Showering joy descends on the body and then disappears, like waves breaking on the seashore. Uplifting joy is able to lift the physical body, actually to move it. A sutta tells the story of a young girl who aroused uplifting joy while contemplating the thought of a shrine. Carried by uplifting joy, the girl traveled to the shrine through the air, arriving before her parents, who went there on foot. All-pervading joy suffuses every part of the body. It's important to keep in mind that the joy we experience in the initial stages of jhana is not the same as the pleasurable feelings of everyday life. And even within the jhana states, the joy that is one of the 7 factors of enlightenment arises only as a result of the development of the 3 previous factors, mindfulness, investigation, and energy. Mindfulness, combined with investigation, shines light into dark areas of the mind. Energy drives our tireless effort to see reality as it is, removing additional obstacles to the attainment of enlightenment. As obstacles subside, the special kind of joy that is a factor of enlightenment arises in the mind. This joy is more durable than the joy that we experience in the initial stages of jhana. Because it comes from understanding, enlightenment joy never becomes weak or fades. When we reach this state, we remain joyful all the time. Tranquility. When enlightenment joy is developed and perfected, the factor of tranquility arises. Tranquility is a mental state in which the mind and body are calm, relaxed, and peaceful. There is no part of us that is not steady, still, and tranquil. Desire, grief, and delusion have disappeared. We feel satisfied, safe, and secure. We do not feel like moving the body, nor do we feel thirsty, hungry, tired, bored, or lazy. Everything is serene and perfect. Although we have not yet achieved the final goal of our practice, for the moment we enjoy profound peace and happiness. Concentration. In this state of joy and tranquility, concentration becomes noticeably stronger and more focused. In earlier stages of mindfulness meditation, our concentration is unsteady. Moments of clear focus alternate with moments in which we are aware of our internal dialogue and of sounds, smells, and other sense impressions. Increasingly, these distractions fade to the background, and we are able to concentrate exclusively on the breath or other object for longer and longer periods. This improved ability to focus is called access concentration. It marks the boundary between ordinary meditation and the jhana states of deep concentration. As we progress through the stages of jhana, concentration becomes a factor of enlightenment. Using concentration as a powerful tool, we focus the mind like a laser beam on the 5 aggregates. Our concentration penetrates to the 3 universal characteristics of all conditioned things: the reality of constant change, the unsatisfactory nature of everything that exists, and the complete absence of a permanent self or soul. These characteristics are no longer a theory. We recognize them as essential truths. In jhana, mindfulness and concentration work together to dissolve all barriers to achieving realization. Equanimity. Equanimity is like the center point on an old-fashioned balance scale. On one side of the scale, we place a heap of rice. On the other side, we place a metal weight. We adjust the quantity of rice until the pointer on the scale is exactly perpendicular. Then we know that we have the correct measurement. This balancing point is equanimity. In the states of Jhana, we use equanimity like a balance scale to fine-tune our cultivation of the other enlightenment factors. If we find the mind is sluggish, we intensify our mindfulness and investigation in order to rouse our energy and restore balance. If the mind is overexcited, we focus on increasing our joy, tranquility, and concentration so that we become more calm. The equanimity that we experience in the Jhana states differs from the type we use in mindfulness meditation to balance harmful and beneficial feelings. Equanimity based on sensual objects, forms, sounds, smell, tastes, and touches, is called equanimity based on diversity. In the Jhana states, the equanimity that arises as a factor of enlightenment is called equanimity based on unity, because it focuses on a single internal object. At this late stage of the path, all of the components of the body and mind, the five aggregates in the past, present, and future, are exactly the same. There is no such thing as good, bad, or indifferent. It is all simply reality, impermanent, unsatisfactory, and selfless. In this state of perfect balance, the sutta tells us, clinging to the material things of the world ceases utterly, without remainder. Key points for developing concentration. The concentration that arises in the Jhana states as a factor of enlightenment develops out of the concentration you begin to cultivate the very first time you sit down to meditate. Concentration is like a muscle that strengthens as you exercise it. Here are some ways to build concentration to support every step in your practice of mindfulness. First, make sure that your concentration is wholesome and free from hindrances, such as greed, hatred, and delusion. For instance, concentration motivated by greed for advanced states so that you can travel through the air is not wholesome. Use skillful effort to put aside feelings and thoughts about ordinary day-to-day concerns. Remind yourself that life is as brief as a flash of lightning. Resolve to use this session of meditation to liberate yourself from the cycle of suffering. Focus your mind on your chosen object of meditation, such as the breath, postures, parts of the body, four elements, three types of feelings, five hindrances, or 10 fetters. Keep your mind in the present moment. Use unremitting effort to maintain focus on your chosen object. If you find that your mind has wandered from your object, gently but firmly bring it back. Be ardent and alert. If you find that your mind is sluggish or sleepy, use effort to arouse enthusiasm. If you find that your mind is overexcited or jumpy, focus on your breathing until it calms down. Be especially alert for any of the five hindrances: desire, hatred, worry, laziness, and doubt. If any hindrance is present, cultivate its opposite. For instance, overcome greed with thoughts of generosity and hatred with thoughts of loving friendliness. Once the hindrance is gone, refocus the mind on your chosen object. Your goal is to use concentration as a powerful tool to penetrate to the three universal characteristics of every experience: constant change, the unsatisfactory nature of all conditioned things, and the absence of a permanent self or soul that is aware of any of this. As your concentration deepens, the mind gradually loses interest in other things and is able to focus on the object of meditation for longer and longer periods. At this point, you should not investigate the details of your experience. Simply focus mindfully on your chosen object. Each time you practice wholesome concentration, it is easier to maintain your focus. No matter how briefly you were able to concentrate, you should feel happy about what you have accomplished. Working together as a team, concentration and mindfulness purify the mind and help keep the hindrances suppressed. Concentration helps you gain first-hand experience of the truth of the Buddha's message. This motivates you to develop more profound states of concentration so that you can attain deeper insights.